into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? Get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
All right, just going to line attack you very welcome along to the Football Show on Off the Ball. Hope all is well with you this evening, and we've lots of good stuff coming up over the course of this hour. We're going to chat a little bit later on to Kathleen McNamee, football writer and broadcaster with ESPN, amongst others, about the WSL, some interesting developments there on the pitch and some off it as well with Megan Rapinoe's comments this week. So we'll put those to Kathleen a little bit later on. We'll also chat to her a little bit about the Ireland-England game tomorrow, and we'll hear a little bit from inside the camp as well. Stephen Kenny and Seamus Coleman and others out before the media today. So all of that to come a little bit later on. But I'm delighted to say now, I hope joining us on the line from, I think, outside Manchester somewhere, Paul McShane. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Adrian. How are you?
How are you keeping?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Am I right about just outside Manchester somewhere?
Somewhere there, yeah.
Not too specific. You don't want to give too much away. That's fair enough. The last time,
I'm in Worsley.
The last time we were chatting was about 2 years ago. You were sat opposite me here in the studio at very different times. How have been the last sort of 6-7 months for you?
It's been a bit strange, with no fans and stuff and everything that's going on in the world. But you know, you have to just adapt and crack on.
Yeah. I want to talk to you a little about the club stuff, and there's lots of stuff to chat to you about, actually, as long as you're happy enough to chat away, of course. And we will get to the Ireland-England stuff maybe in a little bit, but it only dawned on me today that you, I think if I'm right, haven't actually officially retired from international duty.
No, I'm not officially retired, no. I always said in the past that I would always let Ireland retire me. So I've never ever shut the door on Ireland, but... you know, I think it's pretty much, you know, just about shut now. But I'd never actually officially retire. If I ever got the call up again, I'd jump at it, because you know I've always been committed to the country over the years, and I've always loved playing for the country. So I'd never fully close that door.
Does that, I know when we last chatted, it was a conversation about knocking on Alex Ferguson's door to tell him you were available. Has there been So that not closing the door, is that just a we'll wait and see, or is it like a dropping a cheeky text here or there, or letting people know that you're about?
No, I'm just gonna play me football now. I'm gonna try and enjoy the last few years and just let the natural process happen. I don't wanna start, you know, ringing people's phones and stuff and wanting to call up, but you know, I think it's the Irish team have moved on, and I wish the lads all the best, but yeah, as I'm never really going to come out and make a big retirement announcement. As I said, I'm always going to let Ireland retire me.
It was the one thing that I thought was slightly bizarre about Dave McGoldrick's retirement this week, and even more so almost in the absence of Aaron Connolly now, that, like, I mean, I don't know, none of us know, maybe know fully what's going on in the background, but why would you not just hang on? Like, there might be a job to be done.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to have an opinion on that, because you just don't know what's happening in people's lives. You don't know what's going on in the background with personal stuff and family. But I did. I was quite surprised at it myself when I seen it on my phone. I thought the last two games, Didsy had really, I think he turned into the main man for me. He looked very dangerous in games and looked like things were going to happen through him. So I thought it was just a bit. Yeah, it was a bit disappointing then for him to come out with his retirement. But as I said, you just don't know what's going on. You don't know how his body is on a day-to-day basis at the club. And it's a tough one. I think it's probably a tough one to take for fans as well. And as I said, it definitely took me by surprise.
Yeah, that seemed to be a lot of the way the conversations were going. Like, he's 32, he's playing top-level football, he's starting to score a couple of goals, and we don't have strikers. And that makes it all the more that makes it all the more tragic almost in Irish fans' minds, I suppose. Your last cap, am I right, was the 2-2 draw with Slovakia. Was that
20... yeah, that was my last cap, yeah.
2016.
Yep.
Which I'm sure is part of the reason that you want to get back in at some point and not have that as your last memory almost.
It was a strange game, you know. It's when I look back at my Irish career I've got my majority of my caps from 20 to 23. So I always wanted to get back in contention, and you know, I felt as if I was in a very good place football wise for say 6 years. You know, when you sort of you come into your own as a centre back, because it's all about experience, and you know, I felt in a good place, but I didn't really get the break that I wanted, you know, at that particular time. But you know, I played the Slovakia game, and yeah, it wasn't great personally. So yeah, it was, you know, that's just the way football is. It never really. Football careers don't really go to plan. It's very much a roller coaster of up and downs, and you've got to roll with the punches. But you know, I've kept going throughout my whole career, and took the highs with the lows, and just cracked on. You know, in football, you've got to keep going. You know, finish the race, and stay in the fight as long as you can. And yeah, that game was unfortunately probably my last cap for the country. But you know, I had plenty of club football left in me, and yeah, I'm still going, and hopefully I've got a couple of more years playing.
33 caps is like incredible and unfathomable, and in the tiny percentage of footballers who ever reach that milestone. Is it enough for you, or what's your sense not being retired but looking back on it now as an achievement?
I would have liked to have got to 100, to be honest, but it didn't quite plan out like that. You know, I made my debut at 20 years of age, you know, which is relatively young. So yeah, I would have liked to have played every game till I was 35, but it wasn't to be. So you know, I've got to look back on my Irish career with, you know, fond memories. I loved playing for Ireland. I loved, you know, I played in the old Lansdowne Road, which was, you know, a great experience. I've played in Crow Park. I've played in the Aviva. I've played under numerous managers and learned loads off them. So I do, you know, you've got to look back, and I'll always have fond memories of playing for the country, even though it didn't probably finish how I'd like to. But you just, you know, you can't become too upset about things. So yeah, it's been a good ride.
When you said a bit earlier on about you just didn't get the break that you wanted, do you mean like in the international sense or the club break that you desperately needed, or what? Yeah, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, a bit of both, really. It was like, I was playing in the Premier League, and you know, I got promoted with Hull back to the Premier League. So I thought I was in a good place there, but I didn't seem to. You know, the lads were playing okay with Ireland at the time, and I just felt as if, you know, I maybe should have, you know, got a bit of a crack at it, but yeah, it wasn't to be. And also, you know, when I was in the Premier League with Hull, there was times when I wasn't in the team, but I got back in the team and I played a lot of games for Hull in the Premier League. So yeah, I would have liked in that. I'd say between probably the best I felt was probably maybe between say 26 and now.
Really?
So you know, when I look back, I wish I'd got my majority of caps towards the end of in my 20s, but I got them at the start of my 20s, and that was my journey. So I learned an awful lot in that time. So it was, you know, it's good to look back on.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that most of your caps had come so young, and like as you say, that position that people generally tend to mature into it. Was there? I'm just trying to think of who the manager is that you're hinting at that didn't give you the break.
No, Joe. I'm not saying that I didn't get a break. Like I got a big break at 20, and you know, I played under Trapattoni, and there was times under Trapattoni where I was very frustrated because I felt as if I should have been playing, especially the year we got promoted back to the Premier League. You know, I think it came to the stage where I had a few words with Trapp and Marco. You know, I thought I'd done enough to start more games, but I didn't. And then when Martin took over, I did have an ankle injury. I was just recovering from an operation. But then when I got back fit, I felt in a decent place. But Martin seemed to be, he was loyal. He was very loyal to the lads that were in the initial squad for him. So it took me a while to actually get back into a squad, which was, I think I was 29, and I was just off the back of a season in the Premier League with Hull. So, I'm not going to moan about not getting a break. You know, I had plenty of breaks, but I would have liked to have a little bit more in that period where I was feeling probably the best that I'd felt.
Were the few words during the Euros campaign, the qualifying campaign?
No, it wasn't the Euros campaign. It was mental times because obviously the whole 23-man squad was announced but wasn't official, and then I actually ended up getting called into it and then being in the 23-man squad. So, to be knocking on the door in that situation, I didn't think it was right, but because I wasn't playing club level at the time. I'd gone through a bit of a difficult patch with Hull.
He brought you in for your versatility at the 11th hour, essentially, wasn't that it?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. It was interesting times.
What was that town in Italy?
What's that?
What was the name of that town in Italy?
The town in Italy.
Where you remember the training camp? You came in. They'd played. One of the local teams.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember it. I don't remember the village. But it was. I look back and it was a great experience to experience a tournament. But unfortunately the results weren't great for us. But it was good because I'd sort of, when that 23-man squad got announced, I was very disappointed that I wasn't in it. But then I just cracked on with my summer. I didn't really think about it because if I got myself too down about it, I would have lost the head. So then all of a sudden on the radio, you could hear that there was a few injuries and stuff. So I was thinking I've got a bit of an outside chance here. And I actually finished that season with an injury myself. I had a hamstring, but I actually was going to see a physio because I just wanted to rehab my hamstring and get ready for anything that was going to come my way. I just wanted to be prepared for everything. So I rehabbed my hamstring without nobody really knew that I was injured. So it was good that I done that, because when I got the call up, I made the most of it. We played Bosnia in the Aviva, and I think that was, you know, I think I had a decent game. So that definitely put the thought in the traps in Marco's head.
Montecatini was the name of that town.
Right.
When you say you were ringing them up, what I was asking was that in the qualification campaign for those Euros, or was that separate to that?
What, ringing who up?
Trapp.
No, I never rang Trapp. I would never ring him. It was when I had the words with him. It was after a game against Wales away. After the game, I just had a few words just to say, it's. I think I deserve to be playing or whatever in the last few months and stuff with what's gone on. And it wasn't much of a fallout. It was a conversation that you have to have. I think as a player, if you're out of the team and you think you deserve to be playing, I think you do have to ask questions. You have to take that responsibility of yourself. And I know if I was a manager and a player was asking me, you know, about starting, I'd go, yeah, start. And if you mess up, you'll be playing again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was definitely trying to put myself back in the picture. I thought I'd do it through performances and stuff, but if that doesn't work, then I think you gotta have a few words. And I ended up, yeah, doing that. But, yeah, it wasn't, you know what I mean? I got on well with the Trapp, and, you know, I was very grateful for his time with the country because I thought he was brilliant for us at the start.
What did he say to you?
Hey, Paolo. he's a passionate fella and stuff. And, you know, this was like, this was about 8 years ago now, so it was I don't really remember.
Would he welcome players coming to, because like from the outside looking in, he seemed like somebody who was pretty, I don't know if set in his ways is necessarily the right way to put it, but like had a fairly fixed viewpoint that he wouldn't be easily shifted off. Would he be the type of fella that we've spoken before about you knocking on Alex Ferguson's door and you'd written your notes the night before to get your head straight about what you wanted to say? Was it a similar scenario here, or how did you go about it?
No, this was a bit more off the cuff, this one.
Yeah.
I didn't have my notepad out that time. it was towards the end of his tenure trap, so it was I sort of felt as if I just, you know, I had really nothing to lose, so I just sort of just had a few words, yeah, you know, after the game and stuff. But it wasn't anything too juicy for you. It was pretty, you know, straightforward words that happened in a change room, you know, on a probably weekly basis, yeah, up in the country. But it wasn't notepad stuff, you know, and trying to predict answers. It was it was straightforward, just that in the moment.
Yeah. Like when you look at your list of clubs, Paul, like United, West Brom, Brighton, Sunderland, Hull City, Palace, Reading, like some monster clubs in there, and you're not far off your 35th birthday, I know now, and I'm not wanting to retire yet, before you mention that, but when you look back, like when you look at those list of clubs and you look at the Ireland achievements, do you look back and think, Jesus, that was, what a career that was?
No, I don't. I don't really know, because I sort of just live in the moment at the minute. It's like I'm just trying to play as long as I can.
Yeah.
I want to finish my career on something. You know, I want to try and achieve something more. One last thing, whether that's whatever a promotion in the lower leagues or a staying up even. I would like to be a part of something. So I'm not really. You know, when I suppose it's all said and done, I think I'll, you know, might sit down and have a couple of pints with a few friends and look back and think, like, you know, I think I did all right, considering that initially my goal was to play for St. Joseph Boys in Sallynoggin. I've played some great clubs and I've enjoyed me football. As I said, football is such a roller coaster, and you probably have a lot more downs than ups, but when it's up, it's fantastic. Mm. So I'll look back at those memories, and I'll definitely, you know, I've had I'm lucky to have the career that I've had, and it's been good. But I'm just going to keep going for as long as I can. Yeah, I'm 35 in January. I'll reassess at the end of the season, see what the crack is, but I'd. Yeah, I would like to keep going as long as I can, but you know, I'll have to talk to the body at the end of the season and see what's going on.
Yeah, and certainly no harm in doing that. What to ask it a slightly different way, what would, like, your career has been exceptional, and that's like you've lived the beyond, like you've said, your dreams and beyond the dreams of most people who are growing up considering a life in professional sport. But what would the 17 or 18 year old Paul McShane at Manchester United, who's being heaped praise upon by the likes of Alex Ferguson, as you know, been spoken about in the terms that he did about you, what would a 17 or 18 year old think about the career of Paul McShane now?
Well, back then, you know, I wanted to play for Manchester United. I wanted to be in the first team of Manchester United and winning the Premier Leagues and winning Champions Leagues and stuff. But, you know, as I said before, football careers don't always go to plan.
Yeah.
You know, considering that, you know, at United as well, as time went on, I was sort of considered not big enough to be a centre-half, not quick enough to play at the top level, not particularly technical enough to play at the top level. But I ended up doing that, and that was... You know, that was true sheer determination. That was true sheer wanting to actually do it and having the desire to work for it. So as I look back, you know, I'll definitely look back and think, you know, I've done all right in the end. But you know, 17, 18, bright-eyed boy coming out from Ireland, and you know, it's all sort of, you know, rosy. Yeah, I would have thought, like, you know, Manchester United, week in, week out, winning trophies. That would have been the ideal. And anything other than that would have probably deemed as a failure. But, you know, when you think about the amount of players out there and the competition in football, you know, it's a very small percentage that get to do that. But I played the Premier League, played international football, played an FA Cup final, got promotions and stuff. So, I think I've done okay.
You've done exceptionally well, and as I said, lived out the dreams that very few people get to do. Do you think that in some ways, like that, you mentioned about Joyce and then the going to United, like, you're going to one of the, arguably the biggest club on the planet, and it's such an unfair benchmark for the rest of your career. And, like, you know, is that something that you think, like, in hindsight, of course you're always going to go and the opportunity is there and you want to make success with it, but in hindsight, like, the benchmark is so high that everything else looks like a step downwards. In actual fact, like, it's really an incredible achievement, incredible success, your career.
Yeah, well, I never really thought of it as a step down. I felt as if it was a step up moving away from Manchester United, just because at the time I'd gone on loan to Brighton, and I'd played over 40 games at 19 and 20. Ended up getting Player of the Year there. So to go back to Manchester United, and if I wasn't going to be with the first team every day, I probably would have been playing with the reserves and stuff. And I knew I needed to crack on. I needed to strike while the iron was hot. And I was, you know, I wanted to start my senior career. So yeah, I made the decision to leave Manchester United. And I didn't see that as a step down. I felt as if it was, at the time, definitely a step up, just with the way things were going at United. There was, you know, there was great competition there. You know, I wasn't going to play in the first team straight away. There was Rio, Vidic, you know, Shazy, Brownie. And then, like, around my age, there was, you know, Gerard Pique, Johnny Evans, Ryan Shawcross. So the competition was really, really strong. And, you know, I thought to crack on with my career, I needed to leave and, you know, find my way in the senior game. And, you know, I cut the rope myself from Manchester United, and I didn't look back. I didn't look back at United. Sometimes I'd actually, you know, try and forget that I was actually there, just because I just wanted to, you know, totally focus on now making a career for myself.
Wow, that's mad.
Yeah, it's only in the last few years probably that I've actually, you know, really sort of, you know, spoke about United and spoke about actually the great time that I actually had there, because, you know, I didn't want to leave, but, you know, I had to for my own career and stuff. So yeah, it's just when you get older and you look back, you know, you do a lot of stupid things when you're younger, and you think a lot of stupid things. But yeah, at the time I just wanted to cut ties with United and just crack on with forcing a career for myself.
Yeah, and as I said, it's been an incredible career, and you know, as you said, and I'm repeating, you're not done yet, and there's more ahead, and you're at League One Rochdale at the minute. You're injured at the minute, is that right?
Yeah, I'm injured at the minute, yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I've got a groin. I've never had a groin injury before. I think I'm ticking off all the muscles that I haven't injured at the minute. So this is like, yeah, pectineous miss. I think I should be a physio when I'm finished. I know all the muscles and now all the rehab and that. But yeah, so it's a pectineous muscle in the groin. Basically, we're passing it too much at Rochdale, I think. And I've just tweaked it. It's annoying because it's only a four week job, and I'm back training. I'm back training now, but we don't have a game for another 10 days or so. But you know, I'm still dying to get back. I still love competing every weekend. So I don't know if that will ever die, but I'll keep going as long as I can. And, you know, other than picking up the odd injury, I feel pretty fit myself, and, you know, I do everything I can to be prepared for games and training. And you know, I'm not sort of taking my foot off the gas and getting fat. I'm staying fit, and I love getting ready for games.
Yeah, you might be knocking on Brian Barry Murphy's door shortly and saying, listen, I've got no pad out here. I've been giving this some thought. Put me in coach.
Yeah, no, I don't. No, I don't. I think the notepad. Well, the notepad hasn't retired yet. You know, I still, you know, still take a few notes if I have to. I have a chat with somebody, but yeah, no, I wouldn't do that to Brian. You know, Brian's been fantastic. You know, he's a good forward thinking manager, and he's quite a modern day manager. And it's been enjoyable. It's been a decent project at Rochdale, and I'm glad to be a part of it. Just you know, we need to start turning good performances into wins, but hopefully that will come.
Yeah, he's finding his feet. Obviously, as a manager, just that's his first gig. What do you mean he's forward thinking and progressive?
Just the way we're playing. You know, a lot of tactics going on within the game. A lot of rotations in possession. Defensively, we're well set up, and it's you know, he's quite open as well. Opens the floor a lot to players, and he's open minded around the training ground. You know, it's not really a. You know, no, it's not really an old school sort of dictatorship. It's quite open and a relaxed atmosphere to play in. Mm. But he's very, very, he's got a lot of intelligence in the game, and he's got some good coaches around him. And it's at times when we're on it, you know, we play some really, really good stuff, and it's yeah, it's enjoyable when it all clicks.
I know you're doing stuff like trying not to say no to anything at the minute, and doing mad stuff like reading your star signs as to how your future is going to go. Are you chipping in around the training ground with all that bank of knowledge over the years, or is that something that you're leaning towards or no?
Yeah, well, I've done my A and B license with the FAI, and yeah, I'm trying to keep my eye in with the coaching, but it's tough now with COVID. Mm. You know, it's hard to get down to the academy. But I definitely have one eye on that. But it's, you know, I'm just trying to keep everything open at the minute. Coaching would definitely, well, I think it would definitely interest me. Sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I think yes, sometimes I think no. I look at, you know, I always look at even, you know, managers in the past, and I look at Brian now and think, you know, what would I do if I was in that situation? And, you know, a manager, it's a tough gig, like it really is. I think you've got to be 24/7. And, yeah, I don't know. You know, with the I've got a little one now, and with all these interviews that I'm doing now on the circuit. you know, I'm yeah, the missus is going mad. You know, I'm getting away with murder at the minute. But yeah, so if manager's 24/7, it can be. I don't know. I really don't know. But I'd love to give it a bash. I think I probably will go down that road. But yeah, I need to start getting back into getting a few sessions of coaching under my belt and then see where it takes me.
What speaking of progressive managers, and I was interested to hear you say that you've done your groin because you're playing a bit too much football. I don't know how that would work in Stephen Kenny's setup at the minute. What have you made of the few games he's been in charge in terms of the advancement of style of that Ireland team?
Yeah, I think it's okay. It's obviously the results haven't been great. But I think with what we've wanted as a country, a lot of the fans wanted to see more possession-based stuff and more easy on the ice stuff. So I think you've to change a philosophy and to change a culture of playing, I think you have to sacrifice a few results. So Steve, I think the last couple of performances have been decent, but we couldn't seem to put the ball in the back of the net. Mm. So, you know, I'm really interested to see how the next few games go and see how he can really stamp his philosophy on the team. Yeah. But you know, I think we've got to give him time. Got to give time for the players to adjust. So you know, I'm looking forward now to see how we get on tomorrow night and to see the up and coming games.
Yeah, interesting times ahead. But needless to say, we've had lots of love flowing in for you. A couple that I wanted to bring your way that we picked up on Twitter here in the last few minutes. One of them was about something I know that we've spoken to you about before. This one's from Cian, who says that your family's connected with Dublin Hurling and that Sean McShane, who's your dad, and the brothers were known to be phenomenal Raheny and Dublin Hurlers, and we've spoken to you about that before. So that's in from Cian there, and right and proper to bring it up. And another one here that I'm not so sure is right and proper to bring up, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'll probably not maybe go into all the details here, but from Darren O'Dea, who you might be familiar with, who wants to know if we can ask you about the time that you jumped through the front room window and we tracked him down into a field where he was eating something that he shouldn't have been. Is that ringing? You were he says you were eating raw meat, which might ring a bell or two. I don't know.
What is he all right? Is he?
We might let.
So he tracked me down in the field trying to eat.
He's saying the time that you jumped through the front room window and.
That's Father Ted. That's Henry Sellers.
Henry Sellers.
That's Henry Sellers. Let him go. Yeah, I knew it'd be something Father Ted if it was Darren. We're big Father Ted fans.
Listen, why wouldn't you be? I think that.
As Keane said on that as well, me dad and me uncle. I just love. I have a golf day every year. Well, up to last year, and I love when the Rahini boys come and a couple of the Elflas tell a few stories about me dad and me uncle. Crackers, like, you know, if it was done in today's game, you'd be arrested. But so I love the stories and I love the Rahini lads coming down to play.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a good note to leave it. I really enjoyed the last half hour in your company, Paul. Best of luck for hopefully that injury clears up in the not too distant future. You get back in the team, and who knows what the next couple of years holds. But now, thanks a million.
Cheers, Adrian. Thank you.
Cheers. Back after these.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Yes, Football Show on Off the Ball. Kathleen McNamee, football writer and broadcaster with ESPN and others, is on the line. Kathleen, evening to you.
Good evening, Adrian. How are you?
Flying, and thanks. We've lots to get into. We're going to kick off with a clip here from today's press conference, and there was a few interesting bits and bobs. Ahead of Ireland v England in this international friendly tomorrow at Wembley, Stephen Kenny start as Ireland manager, riddled, of course, with issues in terms of positive tests, injuries. This week, no different. Callum Robinson tests positive for COVID-19, and now Aaron Connolly is out injured, and as a result, Stephen Kenny, understandably frustrated. Take a watch.
Aaron will be a terrific player for us, for Ireland. You know, he's really trying. You know, he came in, and the frustrating part of Aaron's injury is that he'll only be ruled out for 10 days. You know, it's only a 10-day injury, and it just happens that we've traded those games in that period. So it's a very minor grade 1 hamstring strain. Very minor, that will only rule him out for a short period, but it was just a deceleration in a training game, and I think it was just very unfortunate for Aaron, and it's, you know, that's the way it goes, but it opens opportunities. Adam Ida comes into the picture, and Ronan Curtis and James Collins, so they certainly come into the picture.
Yeah, that's Stephen Kenny at the press conference today, Kathleen. He's he cut a bit of a disconsolate figure there. He's pretty, I think, frustrated with how his term has gone so far and stuff that he can't control. He's not been a lucky general.
No, he really hasn't. And like, I think, especially after the way the whole thing has gone up until this point, we saw this game as an opportunity for maybe him to settle down on his starting team a bit more. But obviously, again, that has been hampered with the injuries and the positive coronavirus test. I mean, it's the situation with the world right now. We're seeing it, you know, across teams where Liverpool, for example, Joe Gomez today, another injury crisis. You just can't really depend on anything literally until the whistle blows. A lot of teams don't know what their starting lineup is going to be. And I think it's frustrating because obviously looking at this team, there's been massive positives under Stephen Kenny, but one of the main issues where we've struggled is scoring goals. And I think everyone would have liked to have gone into tomorrow thinking, well, this is a game where we can put up someone like Connolly and see what he can do. So it is, it's really unfortunate, but as he said himself, you know, there's very little he can do to actually control the situation apart from deal with the team that he has in front of him.
Yeah, and like on the fact that like the football's been great to watch and the results haven't gone our way, but playing the match at all, obviously an international friendly in the middle of a pandemic, and if the view is that we'll play this game because we need to give ourselves a bit of a morale boost, neither of those logics seem to hugely stack up.
No, not really. And you know, I normally when Ireland play England, it's obviously a massive deal, and especially in somewhere like Wembley, you know, it's called the home of football. There should be masses of crowds there. There should be some sort of excitement, but this just feels like such a dead rubber. I think as well, especially in light of what has been going on and what managers have been saying in the Premier League this week. You know, you had Solskjaer, Klopp, Guardiola all saying that they don't particularly like the idea of their players going off on international break. And I think both sides are going to be very aware of the fact that this is just a friendly and that there are more important games ahead. So, you know, it's almost a case of like, are they going into this looking for a result, or are both teams going into this game just looking to get out the other side without any major injuries? And I think that it just, the idea of like traveling, even England have seen with their game against Denmark, you know, there's so much uncertainty, like that doesn't really play into well for preparation for either side, not knowing if games are going to go ahead, not knowing who you're going to be facing and where. So, I mean, personally, I've said it since the start that it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to have these sort of games happening. Is it nice for Ireland to be able to play a team like England? You know, it's a good challenge. It's a good opportunity to see how we fare against, you know, some of the best players out there at the moment. Yes, but is it worth what might come out of it in terms of injuries, in terms of positive coronavirus results with travel? I don't know. Does it really stack up as that much of a positive for us?
Yeah, it makes no sense at all, and we'll all be glued to it tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I think that's the short story with that game tomorrow. It's Ireland versus England, international friendly, 8 o'clock tomorrow, Wembley Stadium. So a few other things we wanted to talk to you about, the Women's Super League particularly, and Manchester United have been in the headlines on and off the pitch for a few couple of different reasons during the week. But on the pitch, first of all, obviously beating Arsenal and ending that run. They talked to us a little bit about the job that Casey Stoney's done and the significance of the win, if you will.
Yeah, I think what Casey Stoney has done at United is really interesting. Like, for me, she is one of the most interesting managers out there at the moment, because she has very much said since the start of her tenure at United, she wanted to build an organic team. You know, she didn't want to come in and do maybe what Chelsea or City have done, which is get very good people on board, but also throw a lot of money at the situation. Like, when she started out with United, she basically brought the Liverpool defence that she had played with and started from the back and built up. Obviously, this is the first time that United have ever beaten one of the top three sides in the WSL. It's the first time since 2018, I think, that Arsenal have actually lost against a team that wasn't big three, like Chelsea or City. So what she's doing there is incredible, but I think it's really interesting in that a lot of the headlines went to Kristen Press and Tobin Heath coming into the team. But those aren't necessarily the players that we are seeing now is absolutely crucial to Stoney's side. You know, she said it herself that they have brought a certain experience, they've brought a certain level of knowledge, but it's been the younger players that have been setting up. You know, Ella Toon, who got a goal at the weekend, she has gone from barely featuring in the side to being one of their most important players. And I think that's been really interesting to see how Stoney has, she's always been very casual about how she approaches building her teams. She has never one to get overexcited. You know, even after the game at the weekend, she said I'll let them enjoy it for like an hour or two and then it's back to business. So she is very much of the idea that this needs to be an organic process, and she can't just bring in heavy hitters and expect to do well. So I think when you imagine the fact that United didn't even have the squad 3 years ago, the fact that they are now sitting top of the Women's Super League, admittedly, I think they do have a game in hand over some of the other teams. It's an incredible achievement of what she has managed at the side.
She's very impressive, and we've had her on the show as well before, and she's a really incredible speaker, and you can easily see why people buy into her. And she talked about the belief maybe that is suddenly been built into those players, and it's interesting to hear you say that it's not actually necessarily the big names that are coming in. Is this... like, obviously, listening to her, I think a big part of her plan is obviously in relation to building a legacy there and building very much for the long term. But in the shorter term, is that the sort of a win that can springboard United to go on to go on and win the thing? Do they have the squad to do that? Can it be a pivotal moment, or is it a bit of a one-off?
I do think that they I think because she has taken that approach since the beginning of wanting it to be an organic growth, I do think that they have the potential to go on. Is this necessarily the year for it? I'm not sure. But again, you look like Arsenal have not been performing particularly well. They've had quite a good run in the sense of they've had lower teams, So they've been able to build up. But once they meet anyone with any sort of challenge, you know, like the Cities, the Chelseas, the Uniteds after the weekend, they don't have an answer to it. City themselves are sitting like quite the way down the table. So I think it'll be interesting to see them come up again, to see United come up against someone like Chelsea, who obviously like the attacking talent on that team is absolutely incredible. I don't know how Emma Hayes makes her decisions about who's going to play up front most weeks. But I think what I've been really impressed with United is that I've never been under the impression that they think this is going to be a side that is winning titles straight away. They're waiting and they are building a long-term prospect that is going, they're setting it up. And to be fair to Stoney, I think as well, one of the interesting things I found about her during the week was when they shut down Elite Academy football for girls because they weren't sure if it was coming under the elite football or elite sport bracket in the lockdown in England. She brought in some of those academy players into the first team squad. You know, these were girls who are like under 18, they're 17, 16 year olds playing with the likes of Kristen Press, Tobin Heath. So I think there is always that eye on developing players and developing an academy that is going to have a production line of players for seasons to come. And I think that's going to hold them in really good stead for the next couple of seasons. I mean, like if United were to get Champions League qualification, that would be absolutely massive for the side, even in terms of just like the boost of playing against those European big teams and also the exposure that it comes with that as well.
The comments that we mentioned off the pitch from Megan Rapinoe, I'm sure a lot of people would have seen these already this week, but she was very critical of the game globally and the lack of investment in it, but she very specifically went after United and said it was disgraceful that it's taken them this long to revive it. And I can absolutely see her point. And then on the other hand, like they have actually, it feels on one hand to be harsh almost to be critical of the fact that they've now actually gone ahead and done it and are actually putting that investment in place. But I guess she's looking to shock and make a few headlines and get football on the get football coverage and get conversations like this going about it, I guess.
Yeah, like I've seen the shock thing leveled at her quite a lot this week, and I think in some ways it was almost unfortunate. Maybe it was completely planned, but I think considering how United had done at the weekend, it was perhaps unfortunate that that was the team that she specifically pulled out. But like what she said, she wasn't wrong in what she said. It is great to see United doing what they are now in terms of putting in those resources and like building the team and encouraging a team, but the fact that this is only the third year it has existed and this is only their second year in the Women's Super League is insane. And like Megan Rapinoe is incredibly close to Kristen Press and Tobin Heath are at United now. So I think it's quite interesting that that was the team that she chose to pull out. Obviously, United is so popular. It gets so much attention and it's the sort of thing anyone is going to want to write about. But I think she wasn't wrong in any of the criticisms she leveled at them. And there are still long ways to go to actually have a situation where these teams are afforded the sort of proper, I suppose, like resources and as also exposure that they should be. You know, a lot of teams have taken very different approaches to how they integrate their men's and women's teams. You know, Arsenal, they've decided to build very different brands. They've done very similar with United where they have like separate accounts. But I think like there is still a lot more to be done in terms of bringing those two together and using the platform that the men's teams already have to like further help the women's teams. We saw it when Man City won the FA Cup. They had all the different first team players from the men's teams, you know, tweeting support. And then you had Sam Lewis coming out and saying, look at people like Kevin De Bruyne and manage my play off him. And, you know, if you were to get Kevin De Bruyne and Sam Lewis in a room together, those sort of like big names, those are the sort of things that you would like to see teams doing. So because I think that once people actually start to know these characters and once they start to see their team doing well, they are interested. You know, everyone loves to win. So I can't see why any Manchester United fan isn't going to look at the women's team top of the league, especially with how the team are doing on the men's side at the moment and not think, yeah, I want to get behind that. I want to support that.
Even more so, I'd say. Kathleen, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.